This podcast is intended for investment professionals.
Please note that this episode was recorded prior to the start of the global coronavirus pandemic. Market data discussed is subject to change.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to LGIM Talks. This episode of LGIM Talks is around a paper written by Ben Bennett, Retirement Anxiety, Rate Depression and Populism, and What to Do About It. With a cheery title like that, where could we possibly go? Well, this is very relevant, certainly in DC land, with regard to people and spending and anxiety as they enter into retirement. So I wanted to explore this with Ben, both from an economic and a social point of view. So what I'm going to do is just ask you to summarise the paper.
Sure. Yeah, it's a catchy type, depressing title, isn't it? But my background is in bond markets, so I have to write depressing stuff. That's almost my job.
Yes.
So it's about, in the first instance, a sort of economic theory. And like all good economic theories, it doesn't really hold in practice. So I thought, let's sort of investigate it. It's called the life cycle hypothesis. And this theory says that as you are a worker, if you're a worker, what you're doing is you're producing stuff, and you're not consuming as much as you're producing. So you're giving goods into the market and you're not consuming as much. As a result, you're putting goods inflation down, you're putting prices down because you're producing more than you're consuming. You're generally saving money for your retirement. So that should be deflationary or sort of disinflationary. And then as you retire, what you do is you stop working, you stop producing anything and you start consuming. You might not consume you might buy a new TV, a new car, but you're definitely going to consume healthcare, social care. So you're buying goods, you're drawing down your saving, using your savings, you're buying goods, and that should be pushing prices up because you're demanding stuff. Yep. So the theory is as the world goes from workers to retirees, it goes from sort of disinflation into inflation. So prices should be going up. So that is the theory. That's the life cycle hypothesis. So I thought, well, let's have a think about the one country that's ahead of everyone else in terms of the aging process, and that's Japan. Japan is sort of a few years, decades ahead of most countries. It's been aging for a while. It's been getting many more retirees. Has it worked in Japan? And the answer is no. I mean, they've been getting loads of retirees. People are getting older. If anything, inflation is even lower. Interest rates are low. Just hasn't worked at all. So I thought, well, let's see what's been going on in Japan. And there's a couple of reasons why this is. One reason is that people are generally working longer. Mm-hmm. So, you know, if you're a retiree, maybe you're not retiring when you're 65, you're waiting until 67 or even longer. People in retirement then go and get a second job. So that's been going on. So they haven't been necessarily drawing down their savings. If anything, they've actually been still saving. Yeah. And then the second thing that's been going on is that people haven't actually been spending as much as they thought they were going to. I guess you sort of retire and then you decide, let's just watch TV for a couple of years and try not to save anything. That's the anxiety bit. Maybe people are worried that they might run out of money later in life. Okay. And it's not I thought perhaps it was because people wanted to give money, pass money on to their children.
Yep.
But it doesn't matter if you've got children. Mm. People are doing this if they've got children or they haven't. Mm. They just generally continue to save. The one thing about Japan is that their pensions aren't as generous as other parts of the world. So, you know, we have the triple lock here in the UK. Yes. Japan, they've actually been quite fiscally conservative. The government aren't very generous. And their DB pensions generally seem to run out after 20 years. It's not a lifetime.
Right.
So that often they run out after a set period of time. So that's possibly why it's going on in Japan. But then we have to think about whether that's applicable to other parts of the world, I guess, like the UK.
Yeah, I mean, I guess certainly that living longer as well, I guess, and working longer is definitely a trend that, you know, is pretty well established here. And I guess that also that with people looking at retirement, most people, I mean, our research shows that most people actually don't think about retirement. They might have a vague, you know, standing on a beach somewhere and it's fabulous. But the reality of actually, how am I going to finance retirement? What are our plans? What are we going to do? Remarkably, our research and other research points to people just don't really think about this very much. But the point I wanted to make was that given that, it's almost like, well, people haven't done retirement before, so they don't know what the spending pattern is going to be like. So if certainly with the generation that came post-war, baby boomers, perhaps there is a bit more of a saving mentality anyway, rather than a spending mentality. So that's one question, I guess. But the other thing about the anxiety, certainly with the US example, where they've got a lot of data around people retiring, does suggest that there is this kind of reckless prudence where people, even actually on paper, who look like they've got quite a lot of money, certainly if they manage, you know, life quite prudently, would be okay. But the reckless bit is that they are literally underspending, certainly at the time of their more active years.
That makes a lot of sense. I guess the question that I had thinking about whether Japan would be applicable to other parts of the world is whether or not other countries with more generous state pensions or more generous DB pensions, are those people going to be a little bit more comfortable spending their defined contribution pot early on and just, you know, going on that cruise or whatever it might be? There are reasons to suggest that Japan might be the extreme end.
Okay.
But I think you're right. I think there's a lot of people who retire. They've never done it before, obviously, and they're not really comforted by averages that they get given. You know, on average, you're going to live another 20 years. Well, that's great, but what happens if I live 40 years and I run out of money and I'm in total poverty by the age of whatever it is in your 90s? You know, that it's really hard for them to bucket up what they should be doing, I guess. My instinct is that the Japanese experience is probably going to be replicated across the globe, unless you see governments put in place proper, really generous pensions. I mean, that's possible if we get that shift.
Yes, because that point came out in your paper around that perhaps if there was a more generous support system, in effect, that would free people up psychologically to be able to go, you know what, I'm going to be okay, therefore I will spend more.
I mean, like I said before, the triple lock is in itself actually much more generous than what you get in Japan.
Right.
But let's say we had a more populist government take control in the UK, and one of their policies was to double pensions for in the UK, which would obviously be a bit of a vote winner with the people who vote a lot. Let's say that happened, then I'd have thought at that point there should be more spending. Maybe people would retire a bit earlier, there'd be more spending, and that could lead to what the life cycle hypothesis suggests, which is potentially increasing inflation, increasing interest rates. Actually, the one thing, just having said that's worth drilling into a little bit, is that, you know, lower interest rates are in themselves a little bit self-fulfilling. You know, if you're a saver, if you're a pensioner and you've got a pot of cash sitting in the bank, presumably you haven't got equities anymore because you want it to be relatively safe, and interest rates are really low, then maybe you're going to be a bit more nervous about spending the capital. Whereas if interest rates are high, you know, you see that as an income. You see interest as an income, you'll be spending it a bit more. So it's almost self-fulfilling. Low interest rates produce low interest rates because people are worried about not having enough money.
So do you think there's a kind of almost a generational thing going on here, that you're obviously looking at those that have retired and this economic theory? I'm wondering whether the younger generations, for instance, in Japan coming through, will look at life quite differently.
Possibly. I mean, if you're a worker now and you look at the old age population getting larger, you feel, I think, that you're having to support. I mean, just personally, if you know, China is the famous example where you have, you know, one child policy, you've got two parents, four grandparents to support. I think that's a tricky situation. That probably leads you to working even harder, probably not spending yourself and having to support your family. I think as the population gets older and older, I don't know if this changes by generation. I think it just even gets more embedded in people's mentality.
Okay.
So, you know, it's Yeah. It's very difficult. And then you've got all the different other parts of the generational mix in terms of spending and saving that you've got to take into account. You know, you've got the fact that house prices are extremely expensive for the younger generation, so they're going to have to save even more. They have to spend an awful lot on rent. Asset prices have just been a great boon to the older generations over the last number of decades. I think that's weighing on younger populations. So, funny enough, the older population probably have got it as good as it's going to get.
Absolutely.
Maybe they don't appreciate it in terms of that. You know, they should be spending and going on those cruises.
I'm running like mad to jump over the drawbridge before it completely pulls up. I guess the other thing though would be, so let's just imagine then from the economic point of view that the interest rate environment stays relatively low, and what you just said about behaviours being almost embedded. And certainly that's true, I think, of the pensions industry in general, that, you know, younger people would look at what the older retirees, the retirees have got, and they go, I want that, because that's what pensions looks like to me. Yeah. Whereas the reality may be that pensions might look very different to them. And for some of the reasons you've just said, I mean, they may not actually have that many other assets. They certainly won't have defined benefit. They will have a larger DC pot. But perhaps they've been pretty disengaged and not really thought about any of this. And then they come to this point of making decisions or having to make decisions. And what is the sort of the reflex action? It may well be, I'm going to just hold back. I'm not going to spend. Yeah. So I guess that in terms, I suppose my question would be then, if there is the example of Japan, and possibly this example might well play out in the UK, US possibly, I mean, that presumably is going to have a big economic impact.
And I think underappreciated. Back to what I was saying before about populist governments. It's up to them to do something, some sort of fiscal spending.
Yeah, and I mean, in your title was populism, and I guess that, you know, it isn't impossible to imagine in that environment, in a populist government, that this. This might well be something quite interventionist, and I'm wondering then, you know, your point earlier about this sort of deep set behaviours in a way, and propensity to be cautious. I mean, there's this truism that as you get older, you get a little bit more cautious, but in a way, it's almost like how much of a shove or a nudge or a push would you need to really change people's behaviour?
And do you trust the politicians to do that nudge in the correct way? Politicians are can get addicted to spending because, you know, they're that's the reason why they got voted in. People want to keep it going and they have pet projects. And are those projects necessarily productive? Yeah. Like I said, is doubling the pension a productive way of using the fiscal capacity, or should you be cutting taxes, or should you be building another Crossrail or whatever it might be that you can spend on that? I mean, that's tricky, and it's got to be productive, because if you just keep doing this, you just end up just grinding the economy to the ground.
Well, I mean, this wasn't I don't think this was in your article, but I think something that we're already seeing through the Patient Capital Review and the interest in putting money back into sort of the real economy in terms of infrastructure, looking at perhaps even capturing or retaining, you know, good ideas through mid-late stage VC. Definitely in DC, that's absolutely a focus. And I can see how it's quite attractive for governments to push for buy British, which we know that how that ended. But, just as a sense of perhaps a kind of, a nudge, but maybe more than that, a sort of monetary stimulus bribe.
I'm definitely not advocating this necessarily. In fact, I'm not 100% sure it would work, because I don't trust politicians to make the right decisions. But you see it in many other different jurisdictions where politicians have spent a lot of money. It doesn't necessarily end up doing well. If I was a pensioner right now and I saw a populist government come in place and start spending money left, right and centre, that would actually get me more anxious. So I would even save more money. That's the weird sort of issue about it.
Is there presumably there is still a risk of an inflationary shock?
Yeah, well, that would be the case. I think if there was a sort of reckless spending, then the first thing the first reaction for markets would be the pound fall, right, presumably. And even if it wasn't a run, it would fall 10%. And then the issue would be that everything you buy, foreign goods, would go up in cost in pound terms by 10%. That's what we saw after the Brexit referendum vote. When the pound fell, we had imported inflation, and that does lead to something. It's not necessarily good inflation. It doesn't mean that your economy is humming.
Yes.
It means that your pound has fallen and everything's getting more expensive. And I don't think the Bank of England suggested that they would hike interest rates under that circumstance, but I wouldn't have thought so. I would have thought that's not a good economic outcome. I don't think the Bank of England would hike interest rates.
No.
So that's what would happen. But again, I'm not sure if that's a positive outcome necessarily.
So it sounds like in a way that there may be more reasons to be concerned about this propensity to save, to be cautious, and you know, my reckless prudence example, and that generally isn't good news. I suppose the angle that I was coming from also was that you know, a lot of people, certainly even at the moment where they do have more assets, and maybe to your point, never had it so good, are actually, you know, still concerned about, you know, how long will I live? Will I have enough money? But they often use the term scary when thinking about retiring.
Yeah.
Now, if that's what's going on right now for these guys, then it roll back a generation, and let's call that generation property. So they've possibly still got a bit of DB, but you know, they probably got some assets. Actually, again, they've probably got some assets they've got real estate, they've got property, and they've got it in a way that they've still got some gains in there. But if there's a shock to the system, that would, you know, again, psychologically, that would put you in a pretty cautious spending state.
Yeah.
Again, not great for the economy.
No. So, I mean, I think, look, it's up to people like you on the DC side to sort of think, well, what are the sorts of things that we could do to help alleviate that anxiety?
Yeah.
I mean,
because
some of it is warranted, sure, but some of it is overly cautious.
Absolutely.
So how can you get people to do the right thing? Do the right thing for themselves, sure, because at the end of the day, they will have enough money. Don't worry about... Well, okay, don't worry quite as much about the sort of the next sort of 30, 40 years. You should... There has to be some way mentally of getting everything in order and trying to work out what you can spend, what you should spend.
Well, I mean, we'd agree with that, and I mean, we've done quite a lot of work on the four pots concept around, you know, short and long term spending, not having to work it all out on a spreadsheet, simply making it's almost sort of jam jar things that I've talked about before, and others have as well. That you kind of break it down and go with a big sort of don't panic sign over the whole thing, saying, you know, what are you doing already? Roughly, what's your short-term goals? I mean, the FCA Retirement Outcomes Review talks about pathways and has a view that people should be able to think about the next few years. They can't think about the long term very much. That's hard, but that's okay. You know, you can put a little bit of money aside. And it's interesting what you said about the legacy issue around saving for the future generation. Certainly, that's absolutely true as far as we've seen as well. However, that's often related to property again.
Yeah.
You know, I've got an asset that I'd like to pass on. But often that may be the first thing that then gets sacrificed if they need some money shorter term.
Yeah.
But you know, generally the thrust of our four pots is to say There's no irreversible decision. Take this small steps at a time and think about it in terms of real world. What is it that you're doing? What kind of lifestyle have you got? What do you want to do? Certainly in the active years, and then have an eye to when you slow down a bit. Your spending patterns will change. And on that point, I suppose, for this not to become a self-feeding mechanism, you know, what you were talking about with low interest rates, people propensity to hold back and save. For that to reverse, I think it's got to be in a kind of window of the active years as far as retirees are concerned. And that's when we've got to get the messaging right. Yeah. Because if we don't engage successfully with people and get them over that hump of what you describe as the kind of it'll be OK, it might not be great. The PLSA have just come out with their income targets in retirement, and actually, I do think that makes a lot of sense, because you can look at people with, you know, not much money in terms of earning, and instead of going with the old message, maybe you haven't got enough and you just need to save more, and brackets, you're probably going to have a really tough time. Mm-hmm. It's not a great positive message, is it? So, you know, it's actually more about saying with what you've got, even if you have time, you can still improve things a bit, but don't panic. It's, you know, you'll be okay. Yeah. So to your point, actually, then anything that comes on top of that, you know, there is a way in which we can encourage a bit of healthy spending, you know, then that's going to be good for the economy.
Yeah, well, that's it. Do your bit for yourself, but do your bit for the economy. That would be ticking my box as well.
Right. Okay. Well, maybe that's a good point to finish on. Ben, thank you very much. It's been great kicking this around, and I love the fact that, like all theories, it kind of pops as soon as you poke and prod it. But you've got to start somewhere, yeah, haven't you?
Yeah.
So. Thank you. Thank you very much for your time and
your
thoughts.
It's been a pleasure.
Great. And if you'd like to read Ben's full research paper, I'll remind you of the title, Retirement Anxiety, Rate Depression and Populism and What to Do About It. You can find it on our website, and we've also linked to the article in the episode description. Thank you for listening, and see you again soon.
If you've enjoyed listening to this podcast, you can leave us a rating or maybe even a review if you're feeling particularly generous on the Apple Podcast app. It really helps new listeners to find us, and we're always on the lookout for new ways we can improve. As a reminder, this podcast is intended for investment professionals and shouldn't be shared with a non-professional audience. This podcast should not be taken as an invitation to deal in legal and general investments. Any views expressed during this recording belong to the individuals and are based on market conditions at the time of the recording and do not reflect the views of Legal & General Investment Management. Legal & General Investment Management is authorised and regulated by the Financial Conduct Authority. For full terms and conditions, please visit our website. And remember to share this podcast with your investment professional friends, colleagues, or even family members. To find more great content, check us out on Twitter, LinkedIn, and our website.